Shit, man. That hunk came up and messed my old lady. Got to be running coal upside down his head, you know?
Hey, home, I can dig it. No, he ain't gonna lay no more big rap up on you, man.
I say, hey, Sky. Subba say I won't sing. Pray to Jay, I did the same old, same old. Hey,
knock yourself a pro, slick. The gray matter back, lot performers down, not take TCB in, man.
Hey, you know what they say. See a broad to get that booty active. Leg her down or smack her, jack her. Cole got to be. You know? Shit.
Come on, Bob. What the hell are you wearing? Looking like Big Bird's side bitch.
Watch out for that first step, it's a doozy.
It's got a dance curse.
How about you?
Good.
Welcome, everybody, to Flick Magnet, the podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
I'm Bob.
And we are late.
Just a week.
Yeah.
Just a week.
We're late, Bob.
Yes.
I just met the guy. I'm just kidding. I needed some time. What can I tell you?
Things have been busy.
Yeah. I'm working. Shit's going on. But here we are to do Airplane. Another 1980 movie. We seem to be doing a good amount of those movies.
Yes, yes. 80s is our wheelhouse.
That's where the good shit is, man. Sorry.
After watching this movie, I'm like, this is a quality movie.
Yeah.
This is a really good movie.
I learned a lot about this movie. A movie I've seen countless times. Right? I saw things I never saw before in the background, little details. And we're going to get to that.
Oh, yeah.
And stay tuned for trivia, because I learned something in trivia, too.
Trivia!
So, this is it's an interesting movie. And I bet you, at the time, people that are a little bit older than us, me and you, probably found this even more hilarious, because it's related to another older movie.
Yes, a disaster movie. Actual disaster movie.
Yeah. So, Bob, you want to get anything off your chest to the world?
No, I want to get this movie started. I want to drink this beer, and I want to have a nice time.
That is speaking my language. Here's the trailer.
Stand by for the most extraordinary chain of events ever swept up into high adventure.
Hey, Larry, where's the forklift?
Forklift! It's over there where the bag is loaded.
Airplane. Airplane is drama.
This is Dr. Brody at the Mayo Clinic.
There's a passenger on your Chicago flight 209er, a little girl named Lisa Davis, en route to Minneapolis. She's scheduled for a heart transplant.
I want you to make sure that she's kept
in a reclined position and that a continuous watch is kept on her IV.
Airplane is action. Airplane is romance.
I love you, Elaine.
I love you.
Airplane is music.
There is only one river. There is only one sea.
Airplane is dancing. Never has the screen been so big.
You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Peter Graves.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
Leslie Nielsen.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients. But that's not important right now.
Lloyd Bridges.
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Well, I can make a cap. Or a brooch. A pterodactyl. Could you get... Robert Stack.
All right, Steve, let's face a few facts.
And we hope you enjoy the rest of your flight.
Julie Haggerty.
By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Robert Hayes.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here. Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Please, let me handle this.
Calm down now. Get back to your seat. I'll take care of this. Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Don't be one of the four. Everything's been pulled.
Sister, please, don't handle this.
Mayday!
Mayday! All right, now everybody, get in crash positions.
The most incredible adventure the screen has ever created.
He's coming right at us!
The big news is... Airplane.
Damn, that's a hell of a trailer.
That was an interesting trailer.
It's a great trailer. So, that is the trailer for 1980s Airplane, directed by John Abrams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker, with writing credits to those three guys, also from Hal Bartlett, John C. Chapman, and Arthur Haley. They wrote the screenplay to Zero Hour.
Oh, there you go. That's
so,
the movie.
So, they got credit. They got, it's uncredited, but they get credits.
Right.
Like later on in life.
That was an airplane disaster movie, right?
Yes.
Okay. They show that during the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
I didn't know what that was until we just did this episode.
I used to laugh because I went on a cruise and I went, why are they showing the Poseidon Adventure during our cruise ship?
Right. It's probably not a good idea.
You ever see Poseidon Adventure?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen it.
It's been remade a couple times.
Yeah. I've seen one of them.
With our cast. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah. That is, you can't hide that that's not Kareem. That's Kareem.
Lloyd Bridges, Peter Graves, Julie Haggerty, Robert Hayes.
She's so pretty in this.
Yes.
Oh.
Leslie Nielsen, very funny guy.
Very funny, very dry.
Lorna Patterson, one of my favorite actors ever, Robert Stack.
Yeah.
You know what I remember Robert Stack from? Unsolved Mysteries.
I was going to say that, man.
Unsolved Mysteries. Yes.
Yeah.
Here's a mystery.
Yeah.
That we're not gonna really solve and just leave it blank at the end and really give you a mind fuck as an 8-year-old child.
What did you expect? The show's called Unsolved Mysteries, which means we haven't solved it yet.
Are you 5 years old? Are you ready to get scared for the rest of your life by my magnificent voice? I'm Robert Stack and this is Unsolved Mysteries.
Are you ready to be stunned by my beauty?
As a matter of fact, you probably still have that on a soundboard somewhere. We did it for the Vince McMahon episode of the wrestling podcast.
Let's see if I can pull that up and reel. Oh, I deleted that soundboard.
No.
Shit.
Just put it in post.
Yeah.
just as we're talking about Unsolved Mysteries, just play
it's
it.
It's going to pop up.
So funny.
Good stuff.
That is the top 8 guys on this list, and there's a large list of a lot of people on here.
Yeah, this is a kind of a who's who for 1980 back then.
Yes,
I would say
a lot of comedic actors.
Yeah,
people, a lot of serious actors.
People before like us, like our generation. I mean, I'm a little older than you, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. In a movie that you couldn't make today because people would cry about it.
You know, but I feel like, you know, that's starting to turn around, especially with comedy, you know, because certain comedy and certain comedians, they never changed.
No.
You know, and that's starting to be more accepted.
Well, that's what comedy is. It is line walking. It's risk taking.
It's making fun of things.
It's risque. It's you go to those comedy clubs to hear shit that you wouldn't hear on Life.
Right. To hear things that you wouldn't say necessarily.
And believe it or not, after watching this movie again, it's not bad.
This is a not offensive movie.
This is
whatsoever.
Not an offensive movie at all. And if you have offense to this, you're really looking.
Now, we've done some movies that could be pretty offensive.
Friday?
Friday?
Yeah, there's some... there's some things in Friday like, ooh, that is a stereotype that is not nice.
There's things in Demolition Man.
Oh, yeah, Demolition Man.
There's things in Just One of the Guys. Like almost every movie
Leprechaun in the Hood.
Leprechaun, The Babysitter.
Leprechaun in the Hood was, there's some things that are like, whoa, dude.
That movie
was awful.
Is the worst movie. I'm sorry we did that, everybody. The few people who actually listened to that, you're brave, because that's a train wreck.
I apologize. I am not a crook.
I am not a crook.
But that was a terrible movie.
It was. Oh, no more Leprechaun movies.
No?
I think we're done.
Leprechaun 2 was good, wasn't it?
I don't know. Maybe we'll do Space.
At this point...
We'll end on a high note.
I just want to do it for camp.
Okay. All right, never mind. We'll do it. All right, next year this time, we'll do another Leprechaun movie.
Another Leprechaun movie. It's like Jaws 3. People hate Jaws 3. I like it because it's so...
Is that 3D?
Yeah. It's so bad, it's good to me.
I saw that in the theaters.
By the way, rest in peace, Lou Gossett Jr.
I know, I heard.
Yeah.
That sucks, dude. Iron Eagle.
Yeah, first African-American man to win Best Supporting Actor.
No shit.
For an Oscar, yeah.
Fuck yeah, and go, Louis.
And he was the guy in charge in Jaws 3. He was running the whole facility.
That's right.
Lou Gossett Jr.
Damn.
Great actor.
All right, Bob. Let's get some beer.
What is the malted liquor? What gets you drunk or quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer.
Can't get enough of it.
Beer.
How we really love it.
Beer.
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer.
I could kiss and hug it,
beer.
But I'd rather chuck it.
Beer.
Cut my belly out to here.
Beer.
I could not refuse it.
Beer.
I could really use a beer.
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 Beer. Beer. Beer. Beer. Beer. Beer. Beer. Beer.
Mo, give me a beer.
And this will be my first beer in like 3 weeks. I've abstained since not being on the show.
Damn.
I do not allow myself.
Do not abstain.
So this is from our friends at Last Wave Brewing. Over the Bridge, Chocolate Peanut Butter Stout, 6.3 alcohol per volume.
Where are they out of?
They are out of Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey.
Nice. Chocolate Peanut Butter Stout. Here we go. Oh. All right. First hit for me was chocolate, then peanut butter.
Then like a coffee.
Yeah, yes.
Then like a coffee on the back end.
Mm-hmm. It's not too carbonated. It's very smooth. It is it's a tasty little treat here.
That's good.
It's a tasty treat.
I like
Everybody,
it.
Everybody, try Over the Bridge. Go to Point Pleasant Beach. Even though it's a shitty town. Go for this beer. Drink this beer. And think of us.
I don't know. Point Pleasant Beach is not that bad. I mean, it's not that great. It's not that bad.
It's not that good.
No. It's a very overrated little town.
The boardwalk's okay.
Is it? Is it?
Yeah.
You pay too much.
Do you like Nazis? Is what I'm asking.
Nazis?
Yes.
New Jersey Nazis. I hate those
Show
guys.
Me your badges.
Oh, yeah.
Show me the papers.
Do you like going to a carny atmosphere without actually having a carnival?
If I'm going to a carnival, I want to see some midgets. I want to see some hairy ladies.
I want to see the bearded lady. I want to see the strong man. I want to see midgets. I want to see that crazy clown from American Horror Story. Show me carnival folk.
American Horror Story? I haven't watched that in a while. I watched the first three or four.
Yeah, they did one where they were carnies.
I saw that.
Yeah, that had the creepy clown in it.
I forget what he looks like.
Really creepy.
I'm stuck in Hell House Clown.
Hell
House LLC, you seen that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, boy. Watch the first one and the last one. Scary as shit.
But, this beer's good. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Go get it and drink it. And let's get going here.
Let's go.
So we start off with the old Paramount Mountain shot fading into the Paramount logo, you know, just like in that Friday the 13th movies. And we get an airplane tail pretending to be Jaws in a fluffy patch of clouds. But then, let it build. It's going back and forth. It could be some really cool special effects. I'll let you know at the end. Then the airplane comes out and we get our title card. Airplane.
That was a rather large airplane, mocking Jaws.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear what they did there for effects.
Oh, yeah.
But I have it in my shit at the end.
I enjoyed it.
So we then cut to an airport, and we hear over the PA system a man and a woman telling everyone what the red zone and the white zones are for.
Oh, God, this is so annoying.
Yeah. As they keep giving different reports, the lady says that the white zone is for loading and unloading, and there is no stopping in the red zone. The red zone has always been for loading and unloading. There is never stopping in a white zone. Don't tell me which zone is for stopping and which zone is for loading. Listen, Betty, don't start up with your white zone shit again.
Yeah, for real.
It's a couple bickering. Then in walks Elaine, our main stewardess, and she gets asked to donate to a church by some dweeb, but she takes the flower he offers and says no thanks.
Do you remember that back in the day, going to airports and getting harassed by all these weirdo people? I remember when I was a kid, they were trying to sell us a sticker sheet for $5 to help the blind.
See, in 1980, I actually was at an airport because we moved from Jersey to Belgium.
Ooh, land of chocolates,
land of
y'all.
Chocolates. Nothing like quite like a shorn scrotum. I suggest you try it.
I hate people that are intolerant to other people's nationalities and the Dutch.
Yeah. Can I say French people in Belgium are assholes? Sorry. Not sorry.
So like Quebecians?
No, people. I don't know. Do they live in Belgium?
Yes, but they act like they're from France and Quebec.
No, literal people that live in Belgium.
Oh, that are from France?
Specifically Belgium.
Oh, God.
Because I lived there and got treated like shit by them and harassed daily. Back to the PA announcers. The woman, Betty, says that she knows what this is all about. You want me to have an abortion?
Whoa! I heard that and I went, I looked at the TV again. Did I hear what I just heard?
Oh, okay. Let's put a pin in this. Speaking of what you just said. All right. Yesterday, Amy's watching. She puts on Little House on the Prairie. All right?
Oh, God.
She finished watching her game show and then left and went into the bathroom. I go into the kitchen and I start doing something. I'm making something. And all of a sudden I hear, oh, look at the Jew. He's a Jew lover. He's not a Jew. Jews have horns like Satan. I looked up like, what the fuck is this on TV right now?
Then you realize you were watching Fox News?
I go in there and it's Little House on the Prairie.
Wow, stunner.
The whole show was about that. And the ending was, it was an anti-Semitic little fuckwad. And they lure them to the house to show them the horns of the Jew. And they use deer horns. And the kid gets so fucking scared he runs out.
Oh, God.
And screams. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Was he also asking a la South Park for his secret Jew gold that they hold on?
Yes.
Everyone knows you have a bag of fake gold. I want the real Jew gold.
That was a primetime show back in the day, everybody.
Wow.
Primetime.
Yeah. I like going back and watching these older movies so I can go, what?
I mean, I see what they were doing. You know, they were teaching, you know, anti-Semitism bad, right? But fuck, dude.
And that shouldn't be controversial. Anti-Semitism bad.
It is now.
The world we live in.
The world's fucked, dude.
Yes.
It's fucked.
I feel like that meme with the dog who's sitting in the fire and says, this is fine.
I'm good here, guys.
This is good. This is fine.
Sorry, I had to get that out there because you saw something shocking on TV, as did I, so it was relevant. All right, back to this. The guy says that, about the abortion, that it's really the only sensible thing to do if it's done properly.
Or take her to the Museum of Spring-Loaded Boxing Gloves and Stairs.
Or, you know, coat hanger closet.
Yeah.
If it's done properly, therapeutically, there is no danger involved. All right. Then our lead Stryker, Ted Stryker, pulls up in his yellow cab after he jumps the curb and tells the guy getting in that he'll be right back and starts the meter as he heads off.
What a dick.
What an asshole.
He's starting the meter already.
Stryker goes into the terminal and gets accosted by a guy from a church of religious consciousness. The guy tries to pin a flower on Stryker, so Stryker just drops his jacket. His leather bomber jacket.
Yeah, just hands him the jacket. Yeah.
He keeps going as he's clearly in a rush. He's trying to get somewhere. Stryker gets to Elaine and tries to convince her to not go, but it doesn't work. And he turns to the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and he says this.
What a pisser.
Now we cut to the captain, Captain Over, as he walks up to the newsstand. This is one of the things I missed growing up. Didn't miss it this time. And he's looking for a magazine. And on the front of the rack, we have the categories. Fiction, nonfiction, whacking material.
So good.
That was new to me.
So funny.
He opts for that and picks up the latest edition of... You ready?
Yes.
Modern Sperm.
Jesus Christ.
Modern Sperm. He then gets a call on the white courtesy phone from Dr. Mayo. And this is where we are told about the little girl that's going to be on the plane who is due for a heart transplant in 6 hours.
Before he picks up that phone, he goes to pick up the red one. And then the loudspeaker goes, no, the white phone.
She needs a heart transplant in 6 hours, and her IV line needs to be clear, and she needs to remain calm.
The whole time the doctor is talking, I'm laughing because the heart's in front of him beating, and it's jumping up and down in front of his face. You just see the heart beating, and then I'm just like, what? This is so funny. This is
physical comedy.
Such a stupid, funny gag.
That's the thing. It's like in Monty Python in the Holy Grail. The funniest thing to me is the clunking of the coconuts.
Yeah,
it's so fucking dumb, but it's hysterical to me. I love that.
It's the little things.
Yeah, I like that. All right, then the operator cuts in and says that he has an emergency call from Mr. Ham. He says, give me Ham and hold the mayo.
I don't think it was supposed to be funny. I mean,
it was supposed to be funny.
It was because it was such a quick jab. It's like, he did the thing. He did the sandwich.
He said that thing. Now Stryker is trying again to talk to Elaine. He's trying to get her to come to dinner when she gets back tomorrow, but she says that she requested the Atlanta run. She's apparently pissed that he refused a job he was offered at Boeing.
Well, nowadays, it seems like a good idea. Especially after that whistleblower got mysteriously assassinated.
Yeah. What happened there?
And then the president mysteriously steps down.
Interesting. Interesting.
Did he commit suicide with a shotgun to the back of the head?
To the back of the head? Weird. These are weird things.
Weird.
They can all be explained, I'm sure.
Unsolved mysteries.
Insert the sound here. Stryker says that he hasn't been able to get near a plane since the war, and they wouldn't hire him anyway because of his war record. Lane calls bullshit on that and says that he basically needs to let the past go and move on.
Sounds like a little bitch boy.
Exactly. She tells him that it's over and he needs to move on. The church comes back and again tries to pin a flower on Stryker, who just punches the guy right in the face.
He had it coming.
He did. He then purchases a ticket for Elaine's flight in the smoking section.
Yeah. Think about it as a kid, as you're flying on these planes, and they're like, what's this little thing in the seat? Oh, that's for when we were used to smoke on here. It's an ashtray. Oh, what?
But the lady hands him a literal smoking ticket.
Yes. Very funny.
Smoking plane ticket. Yeah.
Nice gag there.
I like that. Stryker then walks out to the tarmac, and when he sees the plane, he's startled. It has a flashback.
Stryker, this is Red Leader 4. Primary target covered by fallen. Decision to proceed is yours. The decision is yours. It's yours.
Jules.
Fortunate son intensifies.
Yeah. All right, so after that, we get our first jive conversation. And we're going to bring in an expert translator in this episode to translate what they're saying, because he's an expert in
jive
white
talk?
Translations.
Whoa.
Of jive talk. There you go.
Shit, man. That hunky muffin mess my old lady got to be running coal upside down his head, you know?
Hey, home, I can dig it. No, he ain't gonna lay no more big rap up on you, man.
I say, hey, Sky. Subba say I won't see. Pray to Jay, I did the same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. Knock yourself a pro, slick. The gray matter back, lot performers down. I take TCB in, man.
Hey, you know what they say. See a broad to get that booty yak him. Leg her down or smack him, yak him. Cole got to be. You know? Shit.
It's time for everybody's favorite game show. Translations by Whitey.
Is this the newlywed game?
Hollywood Squares?
Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, let's let that linger. We're bringing... Hey, Whitey, can you come over here?
Oh, God, dude, he's blinding my eyes. Tell him to put on more clothes.
That's his friend, Bleached.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they're inseparable, apparently.
Oh, I need to get sunglasses. Hold on, I'm going to get some sunglasses.
No, Bleached, I don't... No, I want Whitey. I don't want Bleached... Sit down right there. Sit on the lap machine. Right. Okay.
Someone put a towel over him.
Yes. Fuck, dude. Have you ever heard of the thing up in the sky called the sun?
Here comes the sun.
All right. Whitey, come over here. Talk on that mic. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Whitey. Can you translate this jive? Well, he basically says in the first part, quote, "Golly, that white fellow should stay away from my wife, or I will punch him." Hmm. All right, I mean, that makes sense, Bob. Right?
You know, it sounds reasonable to me,
if you
right?
Go near my wife, you know, I will punch you. All right. What's the next part, bud?
Well, he says, yes, he is wrong for doing that. I knew a man in a similar predicament, and he ended up being sorry. Don't be so naive, Arthur. Each of us faces a clear moral choice.
All right, now what about the end? The end. Get to the end. Well, he says, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
How true, Robert. How true.
And the part when he says the S word, he says, golly.
Oh.
Fuck. Whitey. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Boo! You suck!
All right, now take this fucking weirdo Bleached out of here.
Yeah, seriously. Go. Don't come back.
All right, maybe the next time when we need Jive translation, we'll bring it back. But I don't know when that's going to be, because Jive...
Leprechaun, Return to the Hood?
Oh, shit. No. Oh, God damn it. Get off my screen. Oh, my God. All right, Stryker then takes his seat next to an old lady, and she asks him if he's nervous. He says yes. Lady asks, first time? No, I've been nervous lots of times.
That's funny.
Yeah. Cut to a soldier saying goodbye to his girl like they did in the olden movies at a train station. Bob, the plane starts to move, and he's saying goodbye from the open door as he keeps running. She keeps running into shit, trying to keep up. You know that old gag from the train? You know,
yes.
The plane has now taken off, and we are in flight. Elaine's handing out stuff to read to the passengers, as one of the passengers, a nun, is reading a Boy's Life magazine. And a boy is reading... Ready? Ready?
Ready.
A Nun's Life magazine with a surfing nun on the cover.
Whoa!
Whoa, cowabunga, dude.
Wacky sports.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Whoa, nuns are funny. Next thing you know, the nun will go flying.
Unless it's the nun from the movie The Nun, and then she's scary as fucking shit. I love those movies.
That's a good movie.
Both of them. Saw The Nun 2 by myself in the movie theater.
You know why nuns walk in pairs? So one nun, make sure the other nun don't get none.
Is that for real? Because I think that could be a real thing.
I have no idea.
That's so stupid that I could see it being real. All right. Elaine asks the old lady if she would like something to read. She asks, "Do you have something light?" Elaine says, "How about this leaflet? Famous Jewish sports legends?"
No? Sandy Koufax? Sandy Koufax. That's what I know.
That's one?
Yes.
Sean Green from the Dodgers.
Yes.
I liked him. He'd miss games for Jewish stuff.
Yes, yes, he would.
All right, there you go. There's two.
Are they still mad at Sandy Koufax for not pitching on Yom Kippur?
Are they?
Isn't they?
Shalom?
L'chaim.
Nice. Elaine then bumps into Stryker, and she's not happy, and continues on. The old lady says that it's too bad they're not together. She's lovely. And a darling figure. Supple. Pouting breasts.
Whoa, lady.
Firm thighs. What a shame. Stryker then goes on to bore this poor old lady with his and Elaine's origin story. So we're at a seedy-looking joint. Everyone's drinking and smoking, and Stryker is in the his Air Force uniform. As Elaine is up on the bar playing a trombone. It's a trombone, right?
Yes, that is a trombone.
As two Girl Scouts start brawling over a card game.
Yeah, that was funny. You talk about how it was a rough crowd, and next, you know, Girl Scouts are beating each other up.
They start smashing empty glasses over their heads and breaking wooden chairs over each other. Also, the other patrons are just ignoring this, even though some of them are getting caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, they're just completely oblivious.
Yeah, some guys are getting hit by the chair, like in the arm. They're like, what's that? Wind? Nope. I don't know. Could be a bug. The one girl then sends the other flying down the bar, you know, the old way.
Yes.
And into the jukebox, which starts playing this song. This one. Right there. Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. This one's going out to all the pretty ladies out there.
I actually like the Bee Gees. The music is not bad. They did they really knew what their disco audience was looking for.
High-pitched, nutless men.
Is only one of them still left alive?
Oh, shit. Really?
Is there one BG left?
Just a B?
If Brian Gibbs, is it?
It's just a B. Is he just a B or a G?
Yeah, just one of the Gibbs. One Gibbs.
So everyone starts dancing as Stryker sees Elaine.
It's a very sped-up version of Staying Alive, too.
10 times.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's trivia about that.
That's one of my trivias.
Yeah.
It's okay. We can burn trivia. No big deal.
Trivia. Go ahead, burn it.
Burn it down. Did it.
Just say it.
It was 10 times. Up 10 times for this.
And they had to get the Bee Gees' permission to do it.
They got it.
They got it.
Obviously. So he sees a lady from across the room, and he is immediately taken back by her. I would be, too. She's quite lovely. He asked the guy next to him to pinch him so that he knew he wasn't dreaming. The guy's like,
just gets away from him.
No.
Like, what's wrong with you? And he's sitting there in his uniform, like, totally like,
you bundle of sticks.
You dummy.
The guy looks at Stryker like he's some weirdo and slunks off.
Sure, that's not a Navy uniform.
It could be Navy.
Looks like it's whites, right?
I was just going Air Force because he's a pilot.
Oh, he's wearing whites, so it's Navy.
Does Navy fly?
Yeah, that's why they have aircraft carriers.
I thought Navy was, they're just the water people.
The water people? Stand back. Here comes the water people.
Well, no, I'm serious. I thought the Air Force flew, right?
The Air Force also flies.
And it's in the name.
You'll be shocked to know that some of the Marines,
they fly too.
And the Army has helicopters.
I know. I'm an asshole. And that guy was an Army brat too. How about that? I'm fucking retarded. Sorry. Elaine then tries dancing with someone who was trying to show her that he was just stabbed in the back, literally. But she just thinks it's a cool new dance and just dances. Nice. But Stryker sees this and tosses his hat and goes to dance as he flings his jacket off and poses like John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever.
That was a good movie.
It was okay. But the jacket comes back and hits him in the face. Like that.
That was funny.
Comes back again.
It's a nice gag.
Stryker then tosses Elaine up in the air, and it takes a good 10 seconds or so for her to come back down. More cozy disco dancing and some juggling as the flashback ends. Back at the plane, Stryker apologizes for going on and says that he hopes this hasn't been too boring for the old lady, as we see that the old lady has hung herself.
Yeah, that was funny. She's dead. She killed herself.
Dead. They ate dead.
Dead. You dead.
Your dog's dead. I want his whole everybody dead. His family's dead. I don't know.
The Untouchables?
Yeah.
I want his wife dead. There I want his go. Kid dead. I want his dog dead. I want a Danish dead. Dead, dead, dead.
Nice. So now Elaine goes up to a couple with their kid Joey and asks them what they want for dinner. The man says that Joey will have the steak and he and his wife will have the fish.
Oh, never order fish.
Never
on
order
a plane.
Seafood on a fucking plane?
Yeah, that's like getting gas station sushi.
Yeah, you don't do that. God, come on,
man. Ugh, gosh, idiot.
You want that?
Yes, I do.
Idiot!
Joey then asks when he gets to go up to see the cockpit.
He wants to see the cockpit. Yeah.
Elaine says that she'll see what she can do. Then Elaine asks the jive dudes what they want for dinner, and they answer in jive.
Would you gentlemen care to order your dinners?
Bet, babes. Slide a piece of the porter. Drinks, I run the job.
Steak?
Look at here. I can dig grease and chomp it on some butter and drag it through the garden.
That's some fish. There you go. I translated.
Good job. We didn't even need Whitey back.
Well, he's not coming back. He's an asshole.
He did a bad job.
Yeah. Whitey, go fuck yourself. Now we see a young boy dressed in a gray suit go up to a similar-looking young girl and asks her if she would like some coffee. She invites him to sit down, and he politely asks her if she would like some cream. She says, no, thank you. I take it black. Like my men.
Yes, I like my coffee black, like my men. Interesting.
Says the 8-year-old girl.
8-year-old girl. Back then, we could laugh at that. It's just it made a joke. It's funny.
Starting to see a theme with this movie. With little kids.
Little kids being outrageous?
No. No, not that.
Oh, joy.
Now Elaine is in the back and she sees Ted talking to someone, and now we get her flashback.
Transition.
It's... It's her and Stryker running and laughing on a beach while holding hands. They fall down and start passionately kissing as the waves completely overcome them, like Burt Lancaster and Deborah Kerr in the classic movie From Here to Eternity.
Ooh.
1953, only more exaggerated. Now covered in seaweed, Elaine says how happy she is and wants to drive up the coast to that little seafood place. She pauses and asks him what's wrong. He tells her that his orders have come in and he's moving out tomorrow with his squad. He then says, oh, they're bombing the storage depots in Daiquiri at 1800 hours. We're coming in from the north beneath their radar. Pretty specific.
Yeah.
She asks him when he'll be back, but he says that, I can't tell you that. That's classified.
That's a secret.
But our detailed plan of attack... Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, let me tell you what
it's
it is.
It's right, laid out right here. Anyway.
Dumb.
Nice. They say they love each other and start kissing again. And we get some dramatic music. As the waves come in. On cue. Nice. They should have drowned. That was a lot of fucking water.
You should have died.
You should have died. You should have drowned.
You should be dead.
Get to the chopper.
To the chopper.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Cut to Joey being escorted to the cockpit by Elaine as Captain Over greets young Joey. And he asks him if he's ever been in a cockpit before. Joey says no.
I've never been in a plane before.
Yeah. Captain then asks Joey if he's ever seen a grown man naked.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little odd.
Followed by, Joey, do you ever hang around the gymnasium?
I want to bet on that one.
Yeah. Then the co-pilot, Mr. Murdoch, radios to the tower that they are climbing to 42,000 feet as there is some rough weather ahead. Joey says to him, hey, wait a second. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Murdoch denies it and says that he has him confused with someone else.
Yeah, look at my name tag.
Yes. Joey says that he is Kareem. He's seen him play. His dad has season tickets. Joey says that he thinks he's the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And lots of times you don't even run down the court. That you don't really try except during playoffs.
Just like the modern NBA.
Yeah. Kareem says, the hell I don't. Kareem grabs Joey and says, listen, kid, I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes. I don't know who those guys are.
Walton and Lanier?
Lanier? Or did I spell it wrong?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think it's Bill Lanier.
No, it's not Bill Lanier. That's after this. So it's someone else.
Maybe it's related. There wasn't that many guys.
No. Joey has the look of shock and awe on his face when Captain Over comes back with, Joey, do you like movies about gladiators?
Yeah.
Damn. This guy's a perv. Cut to Stryker telling Elaine that this time things will be different, like it was in the beginning, remember? Elaine says that all she has is memories. She mostly remembers the nights when she would sit on his face and wriggle, and afterwards we'd watch till the sun came up. She says, it will never be like it used to be, not as long as you insist on living in the past. She runs off and Stryker has another flashback of him crashing a plane during the war, and then of he and Elaine at a hospital as Ted recovers from said crash. Elaine says that he got a telegram from headquarters today. Headquarters? What is it? Well, it's a big building with generals, where generals meet, but that's not important right now.
Yeah, that's a gag that's going to come back.
That's a recurring thing. Elaine tells him that he was cleared of all wrongdoing from the raid. Ted says, that's because of him. Six men didn't return from that raid. Elaine says, actually, it was seven. Lieutenant Zip died this morning.
Oh,
no.
Not the zipper.
No. The zipper went down.
Oof.
Night. Elaine hears moaning from the next bed and asks, what's his problem? Stryker says, that's Lieutenant Hurwitz. Severe shell shock. He thinks he's Ethel Merman. And we hear this.
You'll be deaf. Gonna have the whole world on
it is Ethel
plate.
Merman.
Stop yeah. here.
What the hell?
Stop now.
What the hell's going
Honey,
on here?
Everything's coming up roses.
War is hell. It's true. Back to the plane, a stewardess is going around and asking the passengers if they want coffee. She gets to Joey's parents, and then the mom says that she'll have some, but her husband won't. But her husband says that he will have another cup of Joe. Then the wife monologues in her head that, let's do it right. Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Maybe because you make coffee like shit?
Right. Then the stewardess asks the nun if she can borrow her guitar for a sick child that's aboard. She says yes and hands her the guitar over as the stewardess takes the guitar and bops everyone on the head as she walks down the aisle.
Yeah, I like it.
That's funny.
Hi.
The stewardess then takes the guitar to the sick girl and sings her a song. Let's have a listen.
In the silence, I listened to voices inside me, and they told me again and again, there is only one river.
Out goes the ID.
There is
that's
only
not
one
good.
Sea, and it flows through you.
As you see the kid struggling to live.
Flows through me, Bob.
There
Whoa.
Is
and
only
you.
One.
Good voice. Kid's dying, by the way.
Yep. The audience is really getting into this.
Yes, they're all looking on.
The mother's trying to help.
She's giving her CPR. Damn, set of lungs in that. Nice, good job. Back at the cockpit, Lane serves the captain his dinner. I believe he has the fish, as we cut to Stryker telling his story to another poor soul, this time an Asian soldier.
That's I believe that's James Hong?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a very famous Asian actor. He's been in a lot of
things.
Yeah,
I've seen him in a lot of stuff. But he has another flashback. And he goes on about when he and Elaine were in Africa. And they taught them the game of basketball.
Jeez.
Which they quickly learned and dominated as they are playing like the Harlem Globetrotters. Dunking and passing the balls around like pros. Nice. Then Elaine says that she's ready to go home to the plans they made before the war. But Stryker is hesitant and then realizes that Elaine has doubts about their relationship. That's when his drinking problem started, Bob. By drinking problem, of course, I mean he can't get the liquid in his mouth.
He just spills it all over himself.
Yeah.
I laughed at that. That made me laugh.
That's funny. I use that joke to this day.
Whenever you spill something?
Whenever somebody else spills something. I was like,
yeah.
Hey, you got a drinking problem.
That's good.
Back from the flashback, the Asian soldier is now committing suicide by stabbing himself in the gut with a bayonet.
See you later, James Hong.
Because Stryker is boring the shit out of people with these effing stories.
Boring or just driving them to the point, you
of
know.
Of madness?
Of madness.
Yeah.
In the Mouth of Madness.
That's a good movie. Or is it?
I don't know. Super Bowl Saturday?
What? We get a quick shot to the cockpit as Elaine is telling the captain that a woman passenger is getting really sick. As in walks Joey holding a basketball. As the captain says to him, Joey, have you ever been to a Turkish prison?
Jesus Christ.
I can't. This is fucking ridiculous. All right. Back out to the passengers. More people are getting sick as a man says that he shouldn't have had that second cup of coffee and starts puking in a doggy bag. Jim had that second cup of coffee. See what happens, dude?
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that, man.
Listen to your wife. Then the wife says to herself, ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Jim never vomits at home. I like that. That was funny. Now we see Elaine going up the aisle looking for a doctor when a woman says that she thinks the man sitting next to her is a doctor. Elaine asks the guy, Leslie Nielsen, who is sitting in his chair wearing his stethoscope.
Yeah, he's obviously a doctor.
Yeah, clearly. And says that he is. She tells him about the sick passengers as he goes to the woman to check her out. When she starts having full eggs come out of her mouth, as one of them cracks open and a baby chick flies off.
Yeah, that was an interesting skit there.
Yeah, that was weird. The doc pulls Elaine aside and says that these people need to be taken to a hospital. Elaine says, a hospital? What is it? It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Yep, there it is.
Cut to the cockpit where the crew are now showing signs that they are getting sick as the captain leaves to talk to the doc. The doc asks the captain how soon he can land, and we get this nice back and forth. The captain says that he can't tell. You can tell me. I'm a doctor. No, I mean, I'm just not sure. Well, can't you take a guess? Well, not for another 2 hours. You can't take a guess for another 2 hours? No, I mean, we can't land for another 2 hours.
Another 2 hours.
Now, I'm going to tell you this right now. I missed one of the skits. It's in the beginning when they're all the captain, the assistant, the other assistant. They're all meeting Captain Over Victor Vector. What's your vector, Victor? Over under ever that shit.
Yeah,
I didn't do that.
You're not missing anything.
No. So yes, I realize I missed that. That's
eh. Did we miss it? No.
No. Then the plane starts to nosedive as the rush to the cockpit.
Yeah, they rush to the cockpit.
And when we get there, we see that Kareem has passed out and now has on his patented goggles that he used to wear when he played for the Lakers. And his uniform.
Yes.
From the waist down. The captain rights the ship and they figure out what's making people sick. It's one of two options they had for dinner, steak or fish. Captain then notifies the Chicago Tower that they're having problems and they may be coming in hot. Coming in gross.
Ooh,
sick.
Gross.
Coming in puke.
Ew.
He's gonna puke. The Doc and Elaine deduce that what's causing the sickness is, in fact, the fish dinner. He tells Elaine the symptoms and what to expect. And as he's doing this, the captain is reenacting all the symptoms, as we learn, through the shot of the fish skeleton on his
plate. Yeah, it's a whole fish skeleton.
A whole fish skeleton.
It's not just a piece of fish. It's a whole skeleton of a fish.
You remember in the cartoons, like Tom and Jerry, when they'd eat a fish, they'd put it in their mouth and pull it out?
And the whole skeleton would come out.
Yeah, it's that.
Yeah, it's that.
It's that.
It's cartoonishly stupid.
Right. The captain then collapses as they have to pull him off the controls, as we then see some jello jiggling next to some boobies. Random boobs.
Popos. Tatas.
Random tatas. Boobies.
Oops. Jugs. Love them.
Honkers.
Milk trucks arrive.
Mommy milkers.
Oh, dirty pillows.
Hey, baby feeders. Sacks of milk. Okay.
Jubbly, yubbly, yubbly, yubbly.
Yes. Then the captain tells Elaine to turn on the autopilot. She does, and an inflatable pilot pops up in Kareem's seat with a pretty straight-laced look on his face.
Yeah, he's all business, that blow-up right. Man.
Saying this for a reason. It comes back later on. Then the control tower in Chicago radios the cockpit, and Elaine fills them in on what's going on. She talks to Steve McCroskey. He's the guy running things. He suspends all meals on flights out of L.A. He sends a set of conjoined twins on two different assignments.
Jesus Christ.
He's like, you go here, you go there, go. He then gets told that there is no other place to land other than Chicago due to fog. He then takes a cigarette out of his soft pack. They still make soft pack of cigarettes?
I don't know. Do they?
I have no idea. And he says this.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Sure did. Just don't start sniffing glue, because that stuff is bad.
I use that line a lot.
That'll fuck you up.
I have to pick the wrong day to stop sniffing glue.
Now Elaine is in the captain's chair, and she's on with the tower as McCroskey is having her check all the gauges. When the automatic pilot starts to deflate, McCroskey tells her, don't worry. Just beneath the belt line is a hollow tube. That's the manual inflation nozzle.
I like to tell you that when I paused this movie and looked at the age rating, it says PG.
This is PG?
It says PG.
Fuck yeah. Pull it out and blow on it. So...
I've said that before.
She whips it out and continues to give the autopilot roadhead. Wait, no, I mean...
Skyhead. Roadhouse.
Yes. The doctor walks away from doing a gyno exam.
Yeah, he's randomly doing a gyno exam. It's like, what is this?
To go see what's happening and can't believe what he's seeing. You're just in some woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We now see the automatic pilot is reinflated and is now smiling as Elaine and the pilot smoke a cigarette.
He is very happy.
He's very happy.
The cigarette was a nice touch.
I like that. It's funny. Before the scene ends, Elaine looks over at the autopilot and gives it a look like he just rocked her shit.
Yes.
Like, she's got that, like, oh my God, I love you, you fucking
maniac. You have a nice air tube.
Yes. It took all my lungs to get you back up, baby.
All my lungs.
Next, the doc comes in and asks Elaine if there is anyone aboard that can fly this plane. She takes a second to think, I know a pilot, but no. We cut the striker having a drinking problem. throwing shit in his face. So she says, no, I don't know anybody that can fly a plane.
Nope. Nope. Nobody here. Nope.
Doc tells Elaine that everyone's life on board depends on them not only finding someone who can fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner.
Yes, the lightning comes back a lot.
What?
Who didn't have the fish?
Elaine then gets on the speaker and talks to the passengers. She apologizes for the turbulence. And by the way, is there anybody on board that knows how to fly a plane?
You dummy.
You get random boobs again.
Yes. That was another like, did I just see some titties? Excuse me, madam. You have some nice tits.
Yes, just random. So the plane company sends a man to go fetch Captain Kramer at his house to come down and help sort out this mess. And while this guy is waiting in the house, he gets attacked by a golden retriever.
That dog is kicking his ass. Mm-hmm.
And gets no help from the captain or the wife, who are standing right fucking there.
The captain is worse. He's just blatantly ignoring it.
He's still thinking about all the unsolved mysteries.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's that.
In a world where your golden retriever attacks you and you have no idea why.
Yes, and no one to help you. Cut to Stryker telling his story to another poor sap, a Middle Eastern man wearing a turban, as he starts dumping gasoline all over himself and is about to drop the match when the stewardess comes up and asks Stryker if he can help with the problem up in the cockpit. The cockpit? What is it? It's the little room in the front of the plane where the pilots sit, but that's not important right now. She fills him in and asks if he will help. Stryker turns to the guy holding the lit match. He nods. Like, yeah, go help her.
Do it. Get out of here.
Get out of here now. And Stryker goes up to see if he can help. The guy with the lit match blows it out and in relief lowers his arms, but then
boom,
blows up.
He did.
Off camera. Stryker then goes to the cockpit and sees that the plane is on autopilot and there is nobody actually flying the plane. The doc is there and he asks Stryker if he can fly this plane and land it. He says, you...
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Nice gag.
Yeah, it's a classic.
It's quoted a lot from this movie.
Sure. The stewardess confirms that Stryker is indeed the only person on board qualified enough to fly the plane. Cut to Captain Kramer driving his car with the guy who got mauled by the dog. And while talking on his car phone, talking to the tower with the road visibly shot in the background, Bob. You know, it's like a screen of a road.
Police squad. Yeah, it's one of those.
Like that. So Kramer gets off the phone and tells the mauled guy that a passenger is going to land the plane. And it's 101 shot of him doing so. They run over some guy on a bike.
Yeah.
As Kramer talks about how he doesn't have the best faith in Stryker as a pilot. Or as you as a driver.
Yeah.
Because you're clearly a menace.
Yeah, hit somebody's like, in the background.
Exactly. Just then some cowboys and Indians come riding up in the background, Bob.
Out of nowhere.
Back on the plane, Stryker sits at the controls as Elaine comes in and is like, what the fuck are you doing here? That's the look.
I don't trust you.
She's like, you can't fly this thing.
We're going to die.
Doc says that he's the only one. He's the only chance that they've got. Stryker tries to familiarize himself with the controls and accidentally puts the plane into a nosedive. Oops. Sorry, guys. Sorry about almost killing us.
Yeah, we almost died again. Oops.
But quickly gets them out of it. Cut to the passengers where we see a woman freaking out saying that she can't take it anymore and she needs to get off. She needs to get out of here. So a stewardess starts shaking her and yelling at her to get a hold of yourself. Then another passenger takes over and says the same thing, but then smacks her in the face. Doc steps in and says, calm down, calm down. Then a nun says that he's wanted on the phone and smacks her again. He's like, calm down. Then we see that a line has now formed and everyone is waiting their turn and holding a weapon.
This was a, I know this is a callback from Zero Hour, that this happened in Zero
Hour.
Did
it really?
Yeah. And this was also a thing they did back then. The get a hold of yourself smack. That happened in a lot of movies before 1995.
It's a weird time. It's a weird time.
You ever see that Sean Connery interview with Barbara Walters?
No.
Where he talks about, where she goes, do you still believe in sometimes needing to hit a woman? And he just explains, he goes, yeah, I still believe in it. Sometimes you just got to give him a good smack.
I did see that. Sometimes do you believe in hitting a woman?
Yeah, and he's just like, yeah, I stand by it. Sometimes if you want to get their attention, you just got to whack them around. I'm like, Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, try doing that in my house.
Yeah, James Bond.
I will fucking end you again.
That was him growing up in, what, the 40s?
Yeah. No, he's older than that. He's old. He was old. He died old.
He did. I told you he did.
He did. So the Giant Brothers have on boxing gloves. A woman has a gun, a baseball bat, and one with a crowbar. That's the people in line waiting for their chance to
it's assault. It's my turn to beat you.
Right. It's a gang assault. A gang bang. In a different way, if you will.
God.
We now cut to Captain Kramer making his way through the airport terminal, and this is fucking hysterical. Listen.
Excuse me, we'd like you to have this flower.
All the religious sects are going up to him. He's fighting them off.
The Reverend Moon. Jews for Jesus.
Oh. Jews for Jesus.
Jehovah's Witness. How about Buddhism?
Oh, yeah. I'm Jerry's kids.
Oh, yeah.
Scientology.
Or nuclear power.
That was awesome.
Hey, he just starts beating the hell out of
Scientology. Kramer arrives at the tower as McCroskey hands him everything they have on Stryker. Kramer says that he flew with him during the war and he used to be a good pilot until he wasn't. He tells Kramer to get on the radio and to help talk him down. McCroskey picks up a flask and says this.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit drinking.
Goop. Kramer radios Stryker and identifies himself. Stryker answers with quite a bit of animosity.
I don't like you.
No. Kramer picks up on that, but lets it go. He turns to McCroskey and says that they need to build up his confidence. He asks Stryker if he's ever flown a plane like this before. He says no. And immediately turns to McCroskey and says, ah, shit. This is a goddamn waste of time. There's no way he can land this plane. He forgot to take his finger off the button. He says we should route him into Lake Michigan. At least it'll avoid killing innocent people. The whole time, Kramer never let go of the button, so Elaine and Stryker are hearing all of it.
Yeah, you dick.
Yeah. So the first thing they do is disengage the autopilot as he goes floating up into the cockpit until it ends up behind Elaine with both hands on her boobs.
Boobs!
He's doing her doggy style.
Mm-hmm.
She gets it off and takes the co-pilot seat. Back with the passengers, one of them stands up and demands they be told what the heck is actually going on here.
We deserve the no.
Yes.
I want the rights.
Doc turns around and agrees to tell them the truth, but there's no reason to panic as his nose starts to grow with every truth, quote unquote. Now it is true that one of the crew members is ill. Slightly ill. Nose keeps growing. But the other two pilots are just fine. They are at the controls flying the plane. The nose is starting to extend down the aisle now. Free to pursue a life of religious fulfillment. Cut to the Jive Brothers as one of them is acting sick and asking a stewardess for help. But she don't understand no jive.
She doesn't speak jive.
So Mrs. Cleaver from the classic Nick at Night show, Leave It to Beaver, played by Barbara Billingsley.
Leave it to Beaver, Mrs. Cleaver.
Leave it to Beaver. Says that she speaks jive. So she tells the stewardess that he is sick and wants help. She says that she'll try and get some help. Mrs. Beaver says that she's going to catch you up on that rebound on the med side. They reply, what it is, Big Mama? My mama didn't raise no dummies. I dug her a rap. Mrs. Beaver tells them to cut me some slack, Jack. Chump don't want no help. Trump don't get no help. As she walks off, they're like, no, no, say he can't hang. Say 7-Up. Jive-ass dude ain't got no brains anyhow, says Mrs. Cleaver. Beaver Cleaver. Did you watch that show?
No, that was before me.
It was on reruns, on Nick at Night.
I never watched it.
You didn't watch Nick at Night?
I watched Nick at Night. I didn't watch Leave it to Beaver.
You didn't watch, yeah. It's lame.
That's what I was told. It seems like a hard... It was a hard sell to try to get me involved in
you
that.
You had the goody-goody, which was Beef, the little brother, and the big brother, I forget his name. And you had some dickhead like friend that was an asshole. You get it. You get it. The dad was the dad. The mom was the, you know, make fold the mattress shit. You can't fold a mattress.
Can't fold a mattress?
That's why he divorced her, I guess.
Oh, God.
We cut now to a pretty strange scene. Mrs. Over gets a call while sleeping, and it's the tower letting her know that something is wrong with her husband's flight. And they need her to come down to the airport. She hangs up and turns on the light, and laying next to her, Bob, in bed, under the sheets, is a fucking horse.
Yes, she's having sex with a horse.
With his head on a pillow, she tells him she has to go to the airport, and he can let himself out the back door. And there's juice in the refrigerator. Here's the horse's response. It's as you would expect.
Damn, she's taking a horse for her husband's not around.
Oh, my God. Now Stryker asks, when do they start to put this thing down? Kramer says that they should be within radar any second now. McCroskey radios how long until they're within radar. A guy stands up and opens a microwave with a turkey in it with a timer and says, 2 minutes, chief.
Who microwaves a turkey?
That turkey was raw.
Ooh.
It wasn't cooked at all. Yeah, but microwave a turkey? That's disgusting.
You can't microwave a turkey.
No. McCroskey says that he can't take much more of this and says he should quit something else.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
Amphetamines?
Yeah, greenies.
Greenies?
Greenies. They used to take them at the clubhouse of baseball games so they could focus.
Cocaine, like the Mets did in the 80s. Cocaineies?
Cocaineies. Amphetamines.
Amphetamines.
They're good for you.
Cocaineies. Then a gaggle of reporters come in and ask who's flying the plane. McCroskey says, one of the passengers, but he flew in the war, so it's okay.
Which war are we talking about?
It has to be Vietnam, right? Or the Korean War?
Yeah, but every time they talk about the war, they show...
It's the war.
They just show planes with propellers.
It's just the war.
And by Vietnam, we had jets.
Yeah. Now, these are prop planes.
Yeah.
So, World War II?
It's got to be World War II. But he doesn't look old enough for World War II.
No. That was the 40s.
Late 40s, yeah.
This is 19... No, that doesn't fit. Time, no good. Anyway, he then hands it over to his flamboyant assistant. I never got his name, so I name him Flammy. He gets asked what kind of plane it is. He says, oh, it's a big pretty white plane with red stripes and curtains in the windows and wheels like a big Tylenol. The reporter says, okay, boys, let's get some pictures. So they just start grabbing pictures off the wall and desks. Literal comedy.
Literal
comedy. Nice. I like it.
Love it.
I'm here for that. Next, we get a series of good old spinning newspaper front page headlines. Bob, we like those.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
First one, disaster looms for airline passengers. Then Chicago prepares for crash landing. Boy trapped in refrigerator eats own foot. What?
What? That was the National Enquirer.
Yeah. It looked like it was like a young, what's the guy's name from Mask? Corky? No. Rocky.
Rocky Dennis?
Rocky Dennis. He looks like a young Rocky Dennis.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Not good. Then we get some news briefings. News briefings ending with one talk show host saying that they all bought their tickets. They knew what they were getting into. I say, let them crash.
Jesus Christ.
cut to the doc having a moment with a waitress who is breaking down. She says that she's never been so scared and says that she's 26 and she's not even married. Then in walks the woman who got gangbang smacked, beat up earlier.
Bang, 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 bang.
Jim's
bang.
Wife, who had the second cup of coffee. The doc asks how she is. She says, she's really scared, but at least I have a husband.
Yeah, that gag sucked. Nope, not a winner.
Now Stryker's flying the plane, but is having war flashbacks of planes crashing and then realizes that he lost one of the engines because he didn't check the oil pressure. What a maroon.
What an idiot.
He says that this shit's gonna hit the fan when Kramer finds out about this. The shit's gonna hit the fan. The fan.
And it literally does. Shit hits fan.
The end part. Yeah, it gets me.
Gooey.
Yeah, gooey center. Kramer yells at Stryker that they need a pilot who can handle the pressure. Damn it. So he gets all butt hurt and puts the autopilot back in its seat and storms off. He literally just places the blown up thing in his seat and walks off, and it's flying the plane.
Okay. It's a movie. It's good.
Okay. I like it. Got it. So Doc finds Stryker trying to drink some water but failing at it.
He's got a drinking problem.
He does, man. He needs help. And he tells him a story from when he was in the war, in the medical corps. He says that there was a pilot who was very badly injured. The guy said that the captain made the right decision. That man was George Zipp. This perks up Stryker to know that the man he's so upset about injuring, slash dying, killing, doesn't hold him responsible.
The George Zipp?
The Zipper. Stryker gets up and says that he has a plane to land and heads back to the cockpit. God damn it, I'm gonna land this bird if it's the last thing I do. Bob, I need to drink.
Yeah, I just drank my beer. It's a good beer. It's like our spinach for Popeye.
Ah, am I Popeye?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you Brutus?
Probably.
Or was it Bluto?
It's Bluto, yes.
Bluto. Stryker gets on the horn to the tower and says that the doc said the patients are in critical condition and every second counts.
Get off my plane.
So he's going to land the plane now. Kramer says that he's ordering him to stay up there. It's too dangerous. Stryker says he's giving the orders now, Pilgrim.
Listen here, bitch.
I guess the foot's on the other hand now, isn't it, Kramer? McCroskey's like, he'll never make it. Not in this soup. Kramer says, yeah, but it's his ship now. He's in charge. He's the boss. Head man. Top dog. The big cheese. The head honcho. Then he's handed a newspaper headline and he reads it out loud. Quote, passengers certain to die. McCroskey takes it and says, airline negligent. Then the other guy, Flammy, takes it and says, oh, there's a sale of pennies.
There's another place that's going slowly going out of business.
Yes, JCPenney's. Everyone's now in the actual tower, and a referee introduces everyone to each other, as Kramer says to one of the other captains, who has his finger in his ear, to take that finger out of your ear. You have no idea where that finger's been.
Yeah, it's been in his ear.
It's been on his hand.
Yeah, seriously. Unless he's scratching his ass with it.
Still, it's his finger. Then in walks Mrs. Over, as McCroskey tells her that her husband and the others are alive, but unconscious. Flammy says, just like Gerald Ford. I don't get that. And they're doing everything they can. Then Flammy opens her coat and looks at her outfit and says, where did you get that dress? It's awful. And those shoes and that coat. Jeez.
Damn. Roasted.
Yeah. So Kramer and McCroskey are clearing the landing area and lighting it up by dumping lamps.
Yes.
In the runway.
It's a nice visual gag.
They tell Air Israel, Yarmulke and Beard and Scarf and all, to get off.
All the curly cues. Get out of the way. I'm like, ooh, that's a little risque, but funny.
Do Do they not dress like that, though?
Some of them do, yes.
A lot of them do. Stryker lowers the landing gears and tells them they're coming in. Then the doc opens the door and says this.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
That comes back. So Kramer is talking Stryker in and giving him pointers. And while this is happening, Mrs. Over is just all up on Kramer, rubbing his chest and clearly getting turned on.
Oh, yeah. She's a...
She is a... whore.
Hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah. Who likes horse dick, apparently.
That's like...
12 to 18-inch horse cock.
Goddamn hot dog down a hallway.
Her vagine hangs like sleeve of wizard.
Jesus Christ.
He stops talking and looks at her like, bitch, get off me. And your goddamn husband's up there, by the way.
Seriously, your husband. I'm trying to save your husband, and you're feeling me up?
Yep.
The fuck?
The fuck is right, Bob. So McCroskey's he comments on how quiet it is out there and then says this.
Looks like I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
Takes a big old whiff.
Little nose candy.
And he drops the fuck out. Kramer tells Stryker that he's coming in too fast and to sound their alarm. They do, and the stewardess tells everyone to get into crass positions. So everyone poses like they've crashed. That was funny.
That was pretty good.
McCroskey, who was blasted out of his mind, says they're too close and jumps through a window and out of the tower. His hair is standing straight up, by the way.
Yes.
It's so good.
If you don't understand, he's high.
He's high as fuck.
We're going to get high.
Stryker lands the plane, but it's still coming in too hot. He pulls the brake, but it pulls right out.
Oops.
Then amongst all the chaos, the doc comes back in to give some words of encouragement.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
I love it. Stryker's now sweating like he's standing under a hose in the middle of summer. They cut to the terminal as they announce that Flight 209 is now arriving in Terminal 8, Terminal 9, 10. The landing gear breaks and the plane starts skidding and twisting. As Flammy gets on the phone and says, "M.E.M., Uncle Henry, Toto, it's a twister! It's a twister!"
Flailing around in a circle.
Oh, yes. Cut back to the terminal gate. Gate 23, 24, 25. The plane finally comes to a stop, and the doc comes in to give them some more words of encouragement.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah, they've landed.
I love that. It's so funny. His dry persona.
His delivery is great. It's
fucking awesome. Kramer gets on the radio and asks if they're okay, and then tells him that was probably the lousiest landing in the history of this airport. Yeah, I bet so. But he says that he'd like to buy him a drink and shake his hand. Elaine and Stryker smile at each other, and they leave the cockpit as Kramer continues.
He just continues monologuing.
Loneliness, that's the bottom line. I was never happy as a child. Christmas, Ted, what does that mean to you? To me, it was a living hell.
I just hear unsolved mysteries.
It's like to fall in the mud and get kicked in the head by an iron boot. Of course you don't. No one does. It never happens. I'm sorry, Ted. It's a dumb question. Skip that.
Iron claw?
Who wears an iron boot, by the way?
I don't know. It's like a wrestling gimmick, right?
So the passengers get off the plane via the best way there is, Bob. Inflatable slide.
Oh, I want to ride the inflatable slide.
I want to live through a near plane crash just so I can do that. That'd be fun. As we see an ambulance load up with people and then crashes off screen. Elaine and Stryker embrace and suck face.
Whoa!
As Otto, the autopilot, pops up in the cockpit. The cockpit window. He turns and salutes them as the plane takes off.
Yeah, the plane just starts going again.
Yeah. Then a Mrs. Autopilot pops up. As Otto gives us a wink Bing.
All while they're playing 1812 Overture.
Yes.
Royalty free.
And then two lovebirds fly off. The end.
And they start playing the Notre Dame victory song for some reason. I heard that. I'm like, why are they playing the Notre Dame victory song?
I have no idea.
Is it royalty free? Probably.
Probably. Maybe that's why. All right, there you go. That's the movie.
Whoa!
On to reviews. Dear me.
I don't know where I'm going with that.
I don't know. This beer is satisfying.
It's a good beer.
It's very satisfying.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Is my voice kind of like raspy a little bit?
A little bit.
A little bit raspy.
A little raspy. So, it's review time. Now, this has a Rotten Tomatoes critic score of 97%. It's one of our highest rated movies we've done. And an audience score of 89%, which...
97?
97 from the critics.
Holy shit.
And IMDb, which is notorious for scores, it's a 7.7 out of 10, 7.7.
That's high for IMDb.
Yes. Positive reviews. Matt Brunson of Film Frenzy. With his endless succession of movie parodies, puns, and non sequiturs, it's the closest that cinema has ever seen to a live-action interpretation of Mad Magazine.
Okay. I like that.
Alfred E. Newman?
Nice. Hilarious! The Zazz Team's Airplane is probably one of the most hilarious films ever. Surely it belongs in a place in film history, and don't call me Shirley, as a comedy that brings parody, racial comedy, sexual comedy, and just plain old gags into one big explosion of hilarity.
Wacky gags!
The plot has all the elements to become a horrible thrill movie, but instead angles itself into a brilliant comedy that is quotable, admirable, and quite cool.
A horrible thrill? It's a comedy. It's very obviously a comedy.
He's saying they could have gone that way, but they didn't.
Of course they did, because it's a comedy.
Right.
You didn't need to say it. That's unnecessary.
You found this movie in the what section?
Yeah.
The comedy section.
I'm throwing my yellow flag for unnecessary reference.
I got it. Quote, at times like this, it makes me wish I hadn't given up on snorting cocaine.
Whoa.
And I agree.
Go nose candy.
That was a great review.
The booger sugar.
Quinoa 1984 8, March 2000.
Nose blow. So, my next one is from Chuck O'Leary. Nice Irish fella. From fullofdrivein.com. Some of the humor has become very politically incorrect 25 plus years later, and God, I love it for that.
Nice. Nice. Possibly the greatest spoof movie of all time. This movie is just a silly, crazy comedy, but it is indeed a classic. Everything from its classic lines to the classic gags. Maybe not all of it entirely works nowadays, but when the jokes do work, they are pretty funny. I also remember the score being pretty memorable. I don't know why, though.
The score?
What score?
What? The lady singing the song, or the Notre Dame Victory March, or the 1812 Overture? I mean, songs...
Is this the score? Shit hitting the fan?
Or the Bee Gees?
And that's not a score!
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
Okay.
Sorry, dude.
So, my last one is from Mike Massey of Gone with the Twins.
Nice.
Part of what makes this all so effective is how straight the actors play their parts. In the face of unending fortuitousness, the cast remains earnestly above board.
That's a good point. He's 100% right on that. Nobody breaks character. Their facial expressions are pristine.
That's why I hate Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon on Saturday Night Live.
That's a good point, Bob.
They would do like the cork soakers fit.
Yeah.
And the whole time, I was like, you get it? It's so funny because it sounds like cocksucker. And I'm going to laugh the whole time. Fuck you, Jimmy Fallon. You're what's wrong with late night.
It's like in Shoresy. Ted Hitchcock. Sounds like Ted Hitchcock.
Yes. Yes. We get it.
Yeah.
It's funny, But they're not like, fuck you, Jimmy Fallon. Yes. Ever since he's ruined The Tonight Show. That used to be the prestige of late night.
Yeah.
You ruined it.
And watch Shoresy. It's hilarious. My last positive, the funniest movie of all time.
All time.
All time.
Wow.
The greatest comedy to ever do it. Great cast, great writing, great director. A perfect storm of laughs. This used to be on TV all the time when I was younger. Wish it still was. The world needs more laughs. I agree, buddy.
We need a lot of laughs in this world.
The world needs more laughs. Negative reviews.
Negative review times. Kathleen Carroll of the New York Daily News. Now, I put, after the negative reviews, the year this review was made, because it's obviously telling. So this review is from 2015.
Oh.
Jim Abrams, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker, who both share writing and director's credits, become so desperate for laughs that the jokes descend to a much cruder level. This wasn't that crude.
It's got a PG rating. I know it's 1980.
And we saw titties.
Oh, all right, fine.
But
tits.
That's crude?
What else is crude?
That's crude?
I don't know anything else that's crude.
Dude, it's not like they made cock jokes.
No.
Unnecessary cock jokes.
I mean, the hint of pedophilia.
And the blowjob.
It is there.
Yeah.
The blowing of a plastic inflatable tube.
That's crude.
That's suggestive.
It's off color.
Off color.
But it's not crude.
Off color.
Who's that one female comedian that's just fucking horrible?
Amy Schumer?
Yes. She's crude.
When she came up, she was hysterical. One of her first specials I saw, I was crying. I was laughing so hard. I don't know what happened to that person.
She leaned so far into, I gotta make the basic period stupid jokes.
All her jokes are pussy jokes now.
Yes, every single
one. Every single one, and it's not funny anymore.
Just like I don't want to hear a male comedian talk about his cock the entire time.
No, unless it's Shaquille O'Neal.
We're talking about his cock.
Then I'm in.
I think we've had this conversation, but yes, we both want to see what it looks like.
Yeah, I do. It's not gay.
I will pay for it. I will give you $100 to see what his dick looks like.
Is it gay to go to a carnival freak show? No, it's curiosity.
Yes.
All right, don't at me.
How did he not break his tiny wife in half? Split her like a golden spike with the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yes. Nice, Bob. That was good.
So, I don't understand why she said crude. It's not a crude movie.
It's not. What we just talked about, that might have been crude.
Yes, it is crude to talk about Shaquille O'Neal's giant dick.
So, we just showed you what was crude and what was not crude.
See? Right now, there's a star over my head that says, the more you know.
That's right. Boom. My first one. It's not a PG movie. More like a R. This is June 2000. If you're looking for a good movie for your family with children, this one is not recommended. It is rated as PG, and I got one for our Friday family movie night. It was terrible. The dirty language, violence, nudity, implicity, erotic, made it unsuitable for any family.
How do you not research a movie before showing it to your family?
It's 1980 PG.
Yeah, it's a lot different.
It's very different. You're going to love my next one.
Yes.
But go ahead.
So I only got one more on the critic reviews because this movie's so highly rated.
There's not a lot of them.
There was only two negative critic reviews.
I only have three.
So Josh Larson of Larson on Film. This came out in 2008. Most of the jokes are groan-worthy, and some of them are downright racist.
Racist? Go fuck yourself, dude.
Are you talking about the Air Israel? It's off color.
No, it's making an Israel plane look like someone from Israel.
Yes.
That's not racist.
Are we talking about the jive? Because they talked jive back in the day, and jive...
This is 1980. They're just coming out of the 70s.
Yes. It makes sense.
Yeah.
This is not a racist movie.
Go fuck yourself, dude.
Seriously. Go fuck yourself, Josh Larson of Larson on Film.
You're going to like this one. This one is very interesting. You ready, guys? I hate when people say guys.
Hold on to your butts.
Independence Day. No, Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Thank you. Title, I Am Scared. in parentheses, 22nd July. I am scared. I don't like this movie. My tummy is hurting, and I vomit at night.
What?
One more time. I am scared. 22nd July. Says, I am scared. I don't like this movie. My tummy is hurting, and I vomit at night.
What the fuck? Are they high?
It has to be.
You gotta be drunk.
That's 2020. Good year. That's good. That's a good year.
Actually, I had a good year professionally, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, I know. My last one, the worst comedy ever made, 2014. This is not one of the best comedies ever made. It is one of the worst comedies ever made.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
I can't. He says I can, but it's. I can't believe people think this movie is funny. It's not funny at all. It's very stupid. I thought once. I want to again. It was so awful. Why do people like it? How could you think it's funny? Poo poo. That is all it is. They is part in this movie where you see poo poo, which proves my point.
This fucking person's illiterate.
Poo poo, poo poo, poo poo, poo poo. The best part is when a topless woman shows up for no reason, but that can't make up for what poo poo it is. The storyline is awful. The Hummer is awful and sick, not funny.
They talk about the blowjob.
Oh, okay.
That's what a Hummer is.
All right. The acting is awful. Ready? What do you think he ends with? Poo, poo, poo.
What the fuck is this?
Hang on. This guy's getting the bell here. Ready?
Uh-oh, retard alert!
I was hoping you'd play that.
All righty.
Holy God, what the hell was that? Obviously, either you're completely illiterate, or English is not your first language.
Or...
Never go full retard.
Huh?
Huh?
Huh? What do you mean, full retard? Huh?
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
This is me right now.
Retarded. Like, really retarded.
After reading that from that weirdo.
All right, just play the trivia. I might have to do that when I go home. Alright, it's trivia time.
Ooh, a Bob Sultry voice.
In a 2008 interview on a talk show today, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar told the story of being on a European flight and was asked to sit in an empty seat in the cockpit during takeoff so the crew could say they flew with Roger Murdoch.
Nice! The, quote, I gotta get out of here scene where a stewardess tries to calm down a hysterical passenger was actually improvised on the spot. The original scene, based on a scene from Zero Hour, 1957, only called for the stewardess to try to calm her down, and then other passengers tell the stewardess that he will handle this, and then slaps her, with the joke ending there. Lee Bryant, playing the hysterical woman, suggested to the directors that the gag should be extended to bring in other annoyed passengers, forming a slap line. Slap line. That's good, right there. Although they liked the idea, they were hesitant to do it, fearing Bryant might get hurt. However, they agreed to try it and even added in props, boxing gloves, tire iron, revolver, etc. for the passengers. After briefly rehearsing it, they kept it in the movie after one take.
Nice.
According to Bryant, Leslie Nielsen's second slap was not rehearsed or expected, and he really hit her through, though not intentionally. That was hysterical.
That is hysterical. The three directors had a long battle with the Directors Guild of America. The Directors Guild initially refused to allow for a three-director credit. Jim Abrams legally changed his name to Abrams and Zuckers in order to ensure the credit was given to all three directors in the credit.
Suck it.
The Guild ultimately allowed the three-director credit. Suck it.
That's awesome.
That's why George Lucas isn't part of the Directors Guild of America.
Hell yeah.
Because he, you know how in the beginning of Star Wars they have the big long da-da-da-da-da? Yeah. Well, part of it was like, you have to have credits to start. And he went, nah, I ain't doing that, so I ain't joining no guilds.
Okay.
That's Maverick.
Interesting. The doctor role was Leslie Nielsen's first comedic role. He later said he was delighted to get the offer, fearing that he was getting too old for anything but elderly grandfather roles. The studio actually wanted to cast Dom DeLuise as the Doctor, but directors Jerry Zucker, David Zucker, and Jimmy Abrams prevailed. This led to Nielsen gaining a whole new career in wacky comedies, particularly other Zucker Zazz productions.
Like Naked Gun?
When did Police Squad come out? It has to be around this time.
Around this time. Well, then you got Naked Gun. Naked Gun 33 and a
well,
third.
Well, that was like late 80s,
yeah, that
early
was,
90s.
That was a continuation of Police Squad.
Right. But I thought Police Squad was early 80s. Maybe
it was before. Yeah.
I thought it was before this, but I could be wrong. But
yeah, we'll look it up after the show.
That's fine.
But Naked Gun was a great movie.
Oh, it's funny as shit.
Remember when they were having sex with the full body condoms?
Yes.
The movie's so freaking hilarious. The Mustang used in a scene where Captain Rex Kramer is being brought to the airport was owned by Robert Hayes. He got paid $35 a day for its use, and they used it for 2 days.
Nice.
Made $70.
$70. According to the Blu-ray commentary, the song Stayin' Alive was sped up by 10%. There you go.
At age 61, Robert Stack did his own stunts during the fight scene in the airport ticket area.
Hell yeah. The Jaws 1975 spoof in the movie's beginning was made of layers of cotton on a piece of plywood with a hidden wire rack for the airplane to fly around.
Produced for $3.4 million, it took 34 days to complete. Not and bad. The movie was the fourth highest grossing movie of 1980 and has earned $171 million.
Damn. The movie is mostly a parody of Zero Hour, like we said. 1957, a movie that had a main character named Ted Stryker and such famous, not meant to be funny lines like, "We have to find someone who can not only fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner." So like I said in the beginning, like, if you were a fan of that movie and this movie came out, you're probably like, lost your shit.
Yeah.
That was pretty fucking clever.
Yeah, it was pretty clever.
Yeah.
Did someone talk about Shohei Ohtani as gambling? Because speaking of gambling, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's role was originally to be played by Pete Rose.
No shit.
But he was playing baseball at the time of filming, so the role went to Kareem. He was offered $30,000 to appear in the movie, but Pete Rose asked for $35,000 to buy an Oriental rug. No, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He asked for $35,000 because he wanted to buy an Oriental rug.
Huh.
Damn, that's an expensive rug.
It's a very expensive rug. That's Jesus too much Christ. For a rug that you're going to walk on.
Not anymore?
That's it for me.
The singing nun is Maureen McGovern, who sings the theme song to the sitcom Angie in 1979, which Robert Hayes was co-starring in at the time of filming.
Huh.
McGovern's appearance in the movie is to poke fun at her of having sung the Oscar-winning theme to two classic disaster movies, The Morning After from The Poseidon Adventure.
There you go.
And We May Never Love Like This Again from The Towering Inferno.
Yeah.
Nice.
The argument between the two PA voiceovers about the abortion comes from a, quote, a cheap dime store novel. According to the trivia track of the Blu-ray version, the novel is actually Arthur Haley's Airport, which inspired the movie Airport 1970, and Haley also wrote the film Zero Hour in 1957, which
Damn.
Airplanes parodies. And my last one, according to his autobiography, Christopher Lee turned down the role of the Doctor. The role went to Leslie Nielsen, and he described that as a huge mistake.
For him?
Yeah, for Christopher Lee.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it was. This was a successful movie.
The Man with the Golden Gun.
The revolution is televised.
It's time for our ratings. Our ratings, if you will. I'll go first. I don't mind.
Okay.
This movie is a movie I grew up with that I watched as a child, as a tween, as a teen, as a mean green fighting machine.
Whoa.
It's a movie I watch, I own on many, on tape, DVD. I love this movie. It's a good movie. Some of the jokes do not hold up, in my opinion.
You're kind of right on that one.
Yeah. It is, it's not a perfect comedy. It's a funny as fuck comedy. This movie is, as a comedy, it's a 7.5.
Damn.
7.5, Bob.
And we wrote it down. So this is a good movie.
It is.
It's a good movie.
It's a very good movie.
It's very quotable.
It's...
I
still quote this movie.
It's a great quotable movie. It has some funny gags. I really enjoyed watching it again.
Mm-hmm.
We'll watch it again.
I will definitely watch it again. What you got? What's your number?
8.4.
Damn, motherfucker.
It's a good comedy movie.
Like, if we were just doing this as, like... I think we should change the way we rate movies. We should rate them in their genre.
Isn't that what I already do?
No, but like we're doing it as just movie, as a movie overall, right?
I'm rating it. It's a comedy. I like the movie. Yeah, I rate it as like, what it is.
But like if we're doing a horror movie, like this is a 9 out of a, you know, in the horror genre. You know what I'm saying?
Go more specialized?
Yeah.
We could go more specialized. We could do that.
Because
I rate it as a movie. It's a good movie. It's a good movie. It's a comedy. It's a good comedy.
I know,
comedy.
But I'm just like...
The revolution. Oh, when are we running the movies that are friggin' horror, but they're also horror comedy?
Yeah, like Mercy Christmas, for me. I like that movie a lot. I forget what I gave it. I think I probably gave it like a 6 or...
You gave it a 7.
7. All right. The Mercy Christmas is not Airplane. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But
I gave that movie a 3.
But Mercy Christmas as a shitty horror Christmas comedy is that number. Does that make sense to you?
That makes sense to me.
So like if we're doing Airplane in a bubble of stupid, you know, skit comedy movies, this is a fucking 10. But overall...
As a movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I'm doing it. Is that how you're doing it?
I'm doing it... I try to take... Well, it's hard, because I've done 10 movies with other movies, so it's like, does it hold up... Like, if I put it next to Jaws, is it good as Jaws?
No, Jaws is a masterpiece.
Yeah. Is it as good as Halloween?
No. Masterpiece.
So, like, I think this is my highest-rated comedy.
It is, for sure.
It's definitely my highest rated comedy. So it's like, I will use this as a benchmark for other comedies. Okay. This is as good as Airplane.
Okay, yeah. Airplane is really, this is a really, really good, funny movie.
Yeah, I enjoy it. That's why I gave it an 8.4. I'll watch it again. I'll quote it again.
100%.
And yeah, some of the gags don't hold up. Some of them just hit the floor.
What I give good. Ace Ventura? I think it's similar.
I gotta find it.
Because this is slightly better.
Let's see. I have to open
it. And I really love Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, you gave it an 8.
I gave it an 8?
You gave it an 8.
I thought I gave it a 7.
You gave it an 8.
Alright, so with that said, Airplane is now an 8.5.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to say...
This is funnier than Ace...
This is way funnier than
Ace
Ventura.
Yeah, this is funnier than Ace Ventura. Alright. Alright, see? The rankings help.
Yeah.
They work.
That's why I saved
them. They keep us in check.
Yeah. Like, you gave Ace Ventura a 7. There's no way it's not as funny as...
When we do... I didn't change it during the...
Well, these are all the final numbers. That year is locked. Like, I can't change it anymore. I've locked it.
Yeah. God damn it.
So, like...
All right.
It's locked.
I can change this one.
If there was changes, I put it on there.
Yeah,
and
I should have
changed
Ace Ventura to 7. That's what it is.
Unfortunately, we can't change it now.
I know. It's locked in for
it's
history
locked.
Forever.
It's locked in forever. That's
right,
the number.
Put me down 8.5 for Airplane.
Yep, done.
Boom. Nice. Noice. One more time. Boom, boom, boom. That's the show.
That's the show. I'm tired.
I'm tired too, man. My voice is not good.
So you can find us at Facebook at Flick Magnet.
We're on TikTok. We're on all the shit.
Instagram, Flick Magnet. And email us your likes and suggestions, what you thought of this movie, what do you want us to do, blah, 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 blah. I say every week, flickmagnetpod@yahoo.com.
Yeah.
Don't bother sending me spam messages on Facebook. I'm just getting very rude with them.
And your empty threats are just that.
They don't mean anything.
Empty.
I don't care what you think.
Take our balls on your chin.
I said that once.
Yes.
Take my balls in your mouth and suck it.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Thank you guys for listening. We have a good one coming up next time.
We do?
Another good one.
We do?
I think so.
We do?
You tell us.
Okay, sounds good.
Stay tuned for the trailer.
Bye.
Goodbye.
For 400 years, golf has been a gentleman's game. A game of tradition, etiquette, and above all, sportsmanship. Until now.
Y'all ready for this?
Yeah!
Meet Happy Gilmore. He was a hockey player.
That's my putt, baby! Don't you ever touch my putt!
Who was skating on thin ice. But when his grandma needed his help...
Mrs. Gilmore owes the IRS $270,000. We're going to have to sell the house to someone else.
But she's an old lady. I mean, look at her. She's old.
He discovered a new talent.
The house is like 400 yards away.
That's unbelievable.
Now, he's going from the links...
Step right up, folks. See if you can outdrive the amazing golf ball whacker guy.
To the links.
Hey, where are you going with those clubs, punk?
I'm your caddy.
He's going to be on the tour. That's super.
He's got the swing. He's got the drive.
He shoots, he scores!
He's got the balls.
Oh, God, I hurt a little, but I'm all right.
Quite a large and economically diverse crowd here at the Invitational. I guess it's the new tour sensation, Happy Gilmore.
Hey, if I saw myself in clothes like those, I'd have to kick my own ass.
And while he's trying to keep Granny out of the rest home...
I'm telling you, this place is perfect. You're going to make friends in no time.
Get me out of here!
He's driving the game of golf.
Why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Straight into the ground.
Damn you people, this is golf!
I'm Bob Barker. Looks like you and I are going to be playing together today.
This guy sucks.
All right, let's go.
Universal Pictures presents Adam Sandler.
The price is wrong, Bob.
As golf's missing link, Happy Gilmore.
You'll be swell. You'll be great. Gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here. Start now. On the air.